And just before we get into like more fuller discussion points, I'd like to a few words from Dana, who actually I feel kind of has bridged this gap fairly well. He's stayed very relevant as an activist. Movements like Overgrow Canada really keep up with the changing game board. And what do you think is next? How can activists keep evolving at this stage where we're in this kind of in-between period?
Well, that's why I started giving away the seeds, I guess, because I feel like growing is the final frontier of what we want, everybody to be able to grow their own. And this has been a 20-year civil disobedience campaign. You know, Mark really launched it with the information and the literature and bongs and then seeds, and the dispensaries have picked it up, and that's been a huge area of growth. And, you know, a lot of dispensaries are not really so medical anymore and just selling to everybody, which I think is very good. But people still can't grow openly, right? And that's still the thing that's not really allowed yet. And so I thought giving away seeds to encourage everybody to grow was kind of the next phase in that. And I don't really know where you go beyond that. I mean, other than sort of pushing, all the things that we've got, we need to push to have more and more. But if everybody can grow their own, and if we've got independently run dispensaries selling cannabis to people, and if we've got access to vapor lounges and bong shops and information, that's kind of what we want, really, in terms of what our culture, you know, what we want to have available. So I don't really know where to go beyond that, other than actually changing the law. You know, the civil disobedience campaign is great, but we're still living under Harper's laws. And in fact, in terms of changing the laws in Canada so far, our movement has been terrible. The laws have only gotten worse over the last 20 years. But the enforcement of those laws, the reality on the ground, public opinion, court decisions, in every other way, it's been great. But the laws that Parliament passes have not gotten any better yet. Hopefully we got a good one coming down the pipe, right? But so that's how I see it, and I feel our campaign is going to have to continue, and whatever they put in is not going to be good enough, right? Legalization 1.0 is going to be better than prohibition, but not a lot, and we're going to have to keep pushing, and whatever parts in there we don't like, we got to keep breaking those laws and keep doing it until we get to legalization version 7 or 8, where we start getting the kind of system that we're actually looking for, right? So that's how I see it. It'll be an ongoing campaign for a long time. And civil disobedience certainly isn't the only part, but it's a key aspect. But it takes all these things, you know, political work, civil disobedience, public opinion, working at all levels of government and all different parts. So all these things come together to make change. But civil disobedience, I think, is a big driver in terms of if everyone's already breaking the law and nobody cares anymore, it's pretty easy to change the law at that point because everybody already thinks it's done, right? So that's how I see it.
That's true. Yeah, thank you. This is, of course, what's also leading to tension right now, because we've been told we're going to be legalized. We've been told that it's going to be based on best evidence and on public health. But what we've really been hearing back in terms of what they have considered best evidence in public health hasn't really been overly reassuring. Mark, did you have comments on what Dana had said?
Sure. Version one is cannabis. I'd like to speculate as to what version two is. I'm taking off my public health hat for a second, and I'm putting on my MAPS hat, which is the Multidisciplinary Association for Psychedelic Studies. Cannabis is first, psychedelics are second. And quite frankly, heroin and cocaine are third and fourth. You know, all currently illegal drugs need to be part of this. Cannabis just opened. Yes, cannabis is a gateway drug.
Yes.
It's a gateway to legalization. That's the gateway. And so we need to continue the process. The beginning is cannabis.
Nice. Yeah, and that's something that AC Braddock had mentioned in one of the panels yesterday, that has always been what my thought about cannabis was, is that it was the plant that was not going to fit in the box, no matter how hard they tried to put it in that box. And once they realized it doesn't fit in that box, maybe other plants don't fit in that box as well. Dana, do you have a...
Well, I would just say I think it's going to be the same path, where I think medicalization of psychedelics will be the thing, right? It's easy to say no to some kid who wants to take it on the weekend, but a veteran who's got PTSD and he needs MDMA, it's a lot harder to say no to them. Yeah. And then just like with cannabis, you start realizing, well, if it's good for the person who's sick, it's also good to help prevent those kind of things. It's also maybe good for regular people to use in the right context as a preventative or as a, you know, whatever, right? There's lots of studies showing that, you know, magic mushrooms, even a single experience, can change your whole life outlook in very positive ways. So I think we'll see the same kind of, the vulnerable groups that are hard to say no to will be in the front, and that will kind of normalize these things for other people. And then we see, well, it's good for everybody, really, right? So,
yeah, nice. Kirk, I just wanted to get back a little bit to home growing within legalization. The deadline's coming in fairly soon for when we're supposed to see some sort of draft around the medical. So do you think they're going to try and tackle like a medical patients are allowed to grow first and then maybe include that into legalization?
Well, I certainly the Allard ruling requires the government to address the constitutional deficiencies of the MMPR by the 24th of August. Now, that clock's ticking relatively quickly. It does not appear from an outsider's perspective that the government has made substantial progress towards a new regime. I suspect that they're not entirely sure what to do. And I suspect largely the reason they're not entirely sure what to do is that Justice Phelan kept jurisdiction and kept the injunction alive that protects so many patients, former MMAR patients and producers, and said essentially that the injunction lives until further order of the court. Now, as a practical matter, what does that mean? In the past, when the government has responded to declarations of constitutional invalidity, they've moved inches rather than miles. They've taken very incremental steps towards constitutionality. I've argued in court unsuccessfully, but will continue to argue, that those responses have been contemptuous of the decisions of the courts. In effect, they've thumbed their noses at the ongoing constitutional dialogue between the courts and the legislature in a charter-based democracy by taking these tiny little steps. The difficulty is I think they'd like to take a tiny little step in response to Allard. I think they'd like to implement some kind of like five-plant hard cap on medical producers if you have a permit from your doctor, and then just revitalize the MMPR as the commercial distribution avenue, perhaps with some retail component through pharmacies or the like included. The difficulty with that approach is they're not going to get rid of the injunction by doing that. We've educated Justice Phelan enough that he understands that if you can't justify any prohibition on home production in the context of a lengthy charter trial with tons of expert witnesses, the entire resources of the government of Canada at your disposal, bringing in experts from all over the world if you're the government of Canada, and you can't even justify the restrictions on all of our plaintiffs, by the way, all of whom could produce in excess of 100 plants each, it's going to be very difficult to go before that justice again and say, well, we fixed it, Judge. People can all grow five plants now, because the arbitrariness problem remains. It is just as safe or unsafe to grow five plants, 50 plants, 500 plants, 5,000 plants. It just depends on how you're doing it. And so I think there's a big problem there, and I don't think the government has figured out how they're going to address that problem. I can tell you that John and I and the other lawyers involved in Allard are prepared to go back to court if we need to continue to fight this battle that we've been fighting for many, many, many years in the courts. I hope, I desperately hope we don't have to do that. It is difficult. It is arduous. It is tough for the witnesses. It is tough for the lawyers. It's tough for all the people out there that don't have any ability to control the outcome of the events, and yet their very lives depend on what those outcomes are. And so the government has a real opportunity here. Quite frankly, I'm not sure why they're not simply just thinking about bringing back the MMAR for personal production and caregiver production and having the MMPR with some tweaks be the commercial distribution system. It needs a lot of tweaks, but that's beyond the scope of this panel. That seems to me to be the easiest short-term solution whilst you figure out the rest of it. But I have no idea what's in their heads, and I fear to speculate.
Yeah, fair enough. One of the big issues with diversion, of course, is why they're worried about plant numbers, and they're talking about loss of revenue, but they're also talking about access to youth, which touches on what I was talking about earlier about the public health. Right now, our colleges consider 25 to be youth. So in any sort of legal rec market, it wouldn't be anyone under 25 wouldn't actually be legal. Mark Hayden, you had some comments you wanted to make on that.
Well, the issue of access to youth, I think, is the most controversial. And there's essentially two positions out there, and I'd like to fill in the middle ground. The position of Justin Trudeau is it's a nasty drug, and if youth get a hold of it, it'll damage their brains. The position of David Malmo-Levine is it's the same as caffeine, treat it the same as caffeine. So those are two relatively divergent points of view. I've put a lot of thought into the middle ground, and I'd like to just throw out some ideas here. Is My position on access to youth really comes from a paper I've just finished writing on psychedelics and a post-prohibition regulatory model for psychedelics in a world of public health. And we looked at various pieces of the puzzle. Piece of the puzzle number one is there's 23 states out there that allow parents to supervise their children's alcohol consumption. Piece of the puzzle number two is ayahuasqueros and peyote traditions have always allowed youth access so long as there's parental approval but not parental supervision. The issue of health access, if you think about the different, how we as a province, how young people access health services, I think is relevant because youth are divided into mature and immature minors. Mature minors being defined as those who can make their own decisions and understand what they're asking for, and immature minors being defined as those who can't. All of those examples that I've just given essentially are guided by adults in some kind of ceremonial context, or some kind of context, which is sometimes ceremonial. My observation is, my interest in drugs is historical and cross-cultural. And if I look at all drug use throughout the history of mankind, and I look at all drug use around the planet today, largely benign use of drug that's integrated into cultural uses is supervised by adults in some kind of cultural context. And so, at the end of the day, I took all of those pieces of the puzzle and wove it into this paper, basically saying, yes, youth should be able to access it. But they should be able to access cannabis with some kind of context that really we as a society haven't figured out yet. And we need to have a larger discussion of it, and it probably needs to have some guidance by elders. I find it interesting, I'm slightly off my public health hat for a second, to observe the number of people who are participating in green ceremonies now. The existence of the ayahuasqueros, who have come widely throughout North America, have raised an awareness of the issue of ceremonial structures around drug use. And that's spinning off for people who are now doing green ceremonies. In fact, there are a number of people in this room who are participating or running green ceremonies and bringing a spiritual and healing tradition to a cannabis process. I find that absolutely fascinating. Personally, I think that's the discussion that we need to be having.
Thank you. I think we're a little bit over time already, so we should probably move to some questions, because I imagine there will be some. I just wanted to add very, very quickly that...
I'm going to throw one fast thought. My conclusion is, yes, cannabis should be accessible to youth, but it should be a ranked system. Cannabis first, alcohol second, and tobacco third, based on age.